Pop the hood, tell me what you see. Pop the hood, tell me what you see. Pop the hood, tell me what you see. Tell me what you see, it's the Donut Dynasty now. Pop the hood, tell me what you see now. Pop the hood, tell me what you see, yeah. Pop the hood, tell me what you see. Tell me what you see, it's the Dynasty.
Diagnostic, popped it, now your team is the topic. Eitan and Stompy as a team, they're unstoppable. Bowl all bold, but no bold, it is rolling a roll that I'm told, come a bowl to a cockpit. And I just hope there's no leaks, yeah. I ain't changed my oil in weeks, yeah. How'd I get a lot of these stains on my seats, yeah. Only mechanics that I trust cause it's free, yeah. Pop the hood, tell me what you see. It's my dynasty team and it's got a couple needs. Is it this, is it that, is it picks, is it bad? Do I even have a chance, do I got it in the bag? Let me know.
Pop the hood, tell me what you see. Pop the hood, tell me what you see. Pop the hood, tell me what you see. Tell me what you see, it's the Dynasty now. Pop the hood, tell me what you see. Pop the hood, tell me what you see, yeah. Pop the hood, tell me what you see. Tell me what you see, it's the Dynasty.
Diagnostic, gnostic, 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 gnostic.
What's going on, ladies and gentlemen? Welcome to a brand new rendition, a complete and total reimagination, but with the familiar incantation. Welcome to the shop. Welcome to the show. Welcome to the Dynasty Diagnostic Podcast, this week presented by Manscaped. But we'll get to that in a second. My name is Eitan Mosia, and if you haven't heard, I'm here to tell you Mr. Sam Estompy Lane, in for him what I'm sure is a fleeting moment of lucidity and clarity. I'm just joking. But he decided that he'd be taking a step back from all things fantasy this year to focus on family. I joke, but I respect the hell out of Sam and would not have got this show to where it has been without him, and eagerly await his return to the fantasy scene. There will always be a chair available for Scott Fishbowl winner and singlet wearer extraordinaire Sam Estompy Lane on this podcast. As Marshawn would say, take care of your chicken, take care of your mentals. Those are the two most important things. But also, and honestly, between you and me, we all know Sam is really just using this opportunity to get in some of this Manscaped Perfect Package 3.0 in his life, as it's been clinically proven that 99% of partners out there appreciate trimmed hedges. If you have seen Sam's pictures, you know this is a problem for him as well, but I would also put myself in this situation because my Lawnmower 3.0 has kept the weeds away for longer than I care to remember. And our podcast now offers our listeners the exclusive opportunity to get 20% off from the Manscaped store today by using code DynastyD at checkout. Again, chicken, mentals, hedges, that's DynastyD at Manscaped to claim 20% off and get your hedges trimmed. Get you looking spiffy for the new NFL season coming up. But we got this, my friends, and this show must go on. We are ready. We are raring to start this 2020 season. And the only way we could do that is by having the guy who was actually on our first podcast, our first guest on this entire show, back in the building today to do it with us, Mr. Russ Fisher, Dynasty Outhouse. What's going on, man?
It's going good, but I want to do one thing just so you feel at home. Hold on, I'm going to move my mic away for a second because it... God damn it, Eitan, what are you talking about? I want you to feel a little at home with just a little last bit of Stompy before we move on with everything. Just to make you feel good.
I would not be able to get through the podcast without some type of interjection that had probably nothing to do with what was being talked about at the time. But yes, now I'm ready to go. Now I know that this is going to be okay. This is a real thing. We can head forward with this. But man, I was just talking about this with you just a couple of minutes before we started recording here, before we hit the record button. We have been scraping from the bottom of the barrel. We have been diving into freaking water fountains, picking out the pennies, and looking on the other side to see if we could find something to talk about and something to put on a show sheet, to put on a podcast for the past, I don't even know how long. It just feels like it's been too long because we don't have the preseason. We don't have that extra month of football. We actually have news now, man. I'm super excited. I don't even know what to do. I feel like we have to overreact at this point just because we haven't had anything to react to for so long. I mean, kind of where are you with that? You had the same struggles, I imagine.
Oh, yeah. And it's got to be because, well, obviously it is because of the weird offseason, but it's just, you're right. It feels like we had nothing for so long and we were excited by the dumbest coach speak. We were excited by the idea of coach speak. And then all of a sudden, in the past like 5 days, they're just like, everything's happening now. And yeah, we're overreacting to everything because it's real. It's here. It's happening. Like, it doesn't feel like the season starts in 9 days, but the season's starting in 9 days. And that's, well, A, it's awesome, but B, a little scarier with the news that's happening right now. But I love it. It's great. I wish this stuff happened yesterday or the day before so I could have talked about it on my show. But, you know, I'm glad to be here on this show, which I'm going to call it my show now too, because that's what I do. So I'm glad this stuff happens on a day that I'm recording my show.
I love it. I love it. Every time you come on the podcast, you essentially crash the podcast and take over the podcast. So I think we're just going to have a repeat of that again today. But yeah, I mean, going back to that news, like it's been absolutely crazy over the past couple of days. I mean, I think if there's one thing to take away from pretty much everything that has happened, it is that in Dynasty, and this is the Dynasty Diagnostic Show, in Dynasty specifically, ladies and gentlemen, please, for the love of God, for the love of your teams and your sanity, just draft wide receivers. Just draft wide receivers, please. Because if you don't, you're going to be in the situation where 4 years from when you're drafting, you're not sure what's going to happen next. Even if a guy has had a career to date that you deem worthy of a contract extension, that guy may not get it. Even though a guy has had no issues with his team until now, we might see a holdout at the very last minute because there's advantages to do so for the running backs that are choosing to kind of do this right now.
All right, let's specify a little bit for a second. Draft wide receivers in startups.
In startups.
Where you get your running backs. You do draft them, but in rookie drafts.
Absolutely.
I just want to throw that in there. Keep going.
Use your high picks for running backs in rookie drafts because your high picks in rookie drafts are – I mean, you really don't know the hit rate on that. You're probably going to get a hit at running back earlier than you're going to get a hit at wide receiver. That pick is going to accrue value. You're going to be able to trade that pick the pick or the player in a year's time for more than you spent at that moment in time. Oftentimes, for wide receivers, that's not the case, even though the past season or so has made us probably a little bit more bullish than we should be on this young wide receiver group coming in. But yeah, I mean, look, Leonard Fournette, obviously, Evan Silva had the nail on the head, absolutely, with this one, saying that Leonard Fournette was going to be released from the Jacksonville Jaguars. I think they really, really did him dirty the way they released him, waiting to do it 10 days before the start of the season.
Yep.
I feel like, I mean, everything that we've been saying about the Jacksonville Jaguars on this podcast, and just in general around there, this organization, I mean, you can say what you want, but dysfunctional is almost synonymous with Jacksonville Jaguars when it comes to what they have done as an organization to their teams.
Yeah, it's at the point where they're along the pantheon of the Jets and the Bengals and Dolphins seem to have, after a few decades, turned themselves around. Maybe the Browns, they have their moments. But like the Jaguars, Washington, the Jets, like they're starting to become a just all pass thanks kind of team in fantasy, where at least whether the Jaguars were never very good in real football, they always had good fantasy assets. But they're treating their players so bad lately that, man, like I don't think anyone's going to be happy to play there. So I'm a little scared of owning just about anyone there.
In just the last few seasons, if you look at the history of what this Jacksonville Jaguars team has done, Obviously, you saw the Yannick Ngakoue trade announced just a few days ago. That's something we're going to talk about a little bit later on. Before that, it was Jalen Ramsey. Before Jalen Ramsey, it was Dante Fowler. Before Dante Fowler, a guy by the name of Allen Robinson wasn't able to get a contract extension. This is a team that just does not know how to actually appreciate its good players.
Didn't you skip over AJ Abuye, who went to your team?
And AJ Abuye. And that's, I'm just saying, the list goes on and on and on and on and on. There's 1,001 examples of this team just being there in spite of its players and finding ways to find disagreements with every single player on this roster. Moving on to Leonard Fournette in and of himself, I mean, this creates a really interesting scenario. Obviously, Leonard Fournette's value is probably going to take a hit from this because a lot of his value was baked into the fact that you expected a full RB1 workload. You expected some of the most touches in the NFL to Leonard Fournette. Now, I'm not saying that can't happen anymore, but also if you're looking at it from kind of the other perspective, a lot of the reasons why people weren't drafting Leonard Fournette as high as they could be this year had to do a lot with the fact that he was on the Jacksonville Jaguars, the fact that they had the lowest win total in the league, the fact that the offensive line is not good, the fact that this team is probably not going to be able to sustain drives, and I think it just got worse with the release of Leonard Fournette. They're full-on tanking. So if that was your reason for not necessarily buying into this guy, I mean, I think that there are 31 other situations in the NFL that are probably better from a total team perspective than what he had in Jacksonville. So whether or not, I mean, he lands in, I guess, the dream spot of Kansas City or of Baltimore or anything like that, I don't necessarily know if he's going to go there. But even if he doesn't, even if it's moved to something like Chicago, I think it's an upward one for him just in terms of what that offense is going to be compared to what he had to work with in Jacksonville. And I think at the end of the day, I mean, he gets signed and you probably still get low-end RB1, RB2 value from him. Where are you with that assessment?
It's rough because what you said is right. From a volume standpoint, he was in the best spot. Like, we knew what that offense was. The only thing that could have gone better is if the Titans let Derrick Henry go away and he went to Tennessee. Like, those are the two teams that are just like, no, we're going to run. I mean, at least we thought that's what the Jaguars were, but now they're just going to DGAF until they get Lawrence or Fields. But, I mean, okay, so a little self-deprecation. I'm going to tell you exactly where Leonard Fournette's going to go. I just need to point out, I drafted Darius Geis and Leonard Fournette in Scott Fishbowl. So, rock on.
Yeah, my third start.
My third startable running back is Austin Eckler, which means there's a good chance Fournette's going to the Chargers. But in a redraft league that I did on Saturday, I drafted Leonard Fournette. It's a keeper league, but I technically drafted him in the third, so it's kind of like maybe fourth, fifth round. But in the first round, I said, screw it, let me just take Clyde Edwards-Helaire, which means he's either going to the Chargers or the Chiefs, just because that's the way my week's been going. I never can figure out how the waiver system works or when it works in the NFL. I know right now it's the same order as the draft order. I feel like he clears just because, you know, by the time this comes out, it's probably going to happen already. But I feel like he clears because no one's going to pay him $4 million. And that's kind of what he's owed. I have no idea because he's suing the league or the Jaguars for the grievance for the money of the guarantee that they took away from him. But I think he's going to clear and I think he's going to sign somewhere. Where do I want him to sign? Back in Jacksonville, man, like, you're right. Like, that's really just the best situation. There's a couple of places I think he'll be better than the people that are there already. I agree. You said Chicago. I think that would be awesome. David Montgomery is probably a great backup. Let's be honest. No one's that enamored with him anymore. He's not that great. Plus, he has the groin injury. Miami? Because, I mean, look, Miami really just screwed up tanking. And I know they probably weren't really tanking anyway, but that team is good. And I think we don't necessarily realize how good they can be. Like, if one or two of their linebackers and defensive linemen work out, that entire team is very good. I mean, they traded for a bunch of offensive linemen. They have Yolo Fitzpatrick, who is actually a good enough quarterback for a flying offense, with a couple of great wide receivers and athletic tight end. If they have Leonard Fournette back there to completely open up the passing game as well, like, that's a really good offense, especially once Tua steps in. where, like, reality, where do I think it's going to happen? I honestly have zero idea. Like, this is absolutely a Seahawks move to grab him. And even though there's no reason to, I was about to, cause I mean, you're alerted, you know, Kamara might be traded. And if Seahawks had their firsts, I know they'd be all over it because that's what they love to do. But thankfully they spent them already. So they can't waste it on Kamara on his last year of contract, which again, it's what they love to do.
So I wish I had a good. They would totally hamstring the entire franchise to get that done. I mean, you know that, Russ.
They do it. They love it.
But yeah, I mean, yeah, it does seem like there's a lot of places that he could go and actually still have some pretty decent value. So I'm not overly worried with him. I mean, he's definitely a hold for me. I would not be selling for anything because I think if you're selling right now, you're getting a second. And I think you're getting more value than Leonard than a second round pick in Leonard Fournette if he goes anywhere halfway decent. So I'd definitely be holding right now. But I mean, we'd have to move on to a guy that kind of pulled the same move, except it was migraines for him. And it turns out $12 million AP average annual value contract for Joe Mixon gets rid of the headache. Gets rid of the headache really, really quickly. It's very expensive Excedrin that he was given to get over that migraine. And he seems to be back in the fold on the Cincinnati offense that now looks poised to do a lot of things for the next few years.
Yeah, love that offense.
The thing with the Cincinnati Bengals offense is everyone's there. Everyone's there for a long time. Joe Burrow is going to be there at a minimum, if he bombs for 5 years. You have Joe Mixon, who's now signed for 5 years, including this year.
Yeah.
That's where we are. We're at with Joe Mixon as well. We have Tyler Boyd, who just signed a long-term extension last year. T. Higgins is a rookie. He's going to be there for 4 years at a minimum. I mean, this Bengals offense looks like it really does have the skill position talent to make things work. It's really just a matter of whether or not they can get that offensive line together. And they have a bunch of injured first-round picks at offensive line that are coming back into the fold this season. So this just looks like an offense that is poised for everyone to kind of skyrocket. And I haven't even mentioned A.J. Green. If he comes back anywhere close to anything he's ever been in his career, then, I mean, we're talking about an offense that probably has in the entire NFL atop, what, 8 skill position group? It's just hard to argue that. And the fact of the matter is we saw the most efficient college season from an NFL or from a quarterback from Joe Burrow last year. We saw one of the best college seasons just in terms of scoring, in terms of the touchdowns that this guy was able to put together just last year. He has had the most time of any of his receivers to work with Tyler Boyd. He was the guy that made Justin Jefferson the draft pick that Justin Jefferson was. I think that Tyler Boyd actually has more upside than even Florida this season, and his floor is something that you're even drafting him for. I think it's got to the point that if you're picking Tyler Boyd and you're picking Tyler Boyd in the 6th, 7th round where he's going, you're probably getting something closer to a 4th round talent from the jump without even factoring too much into that. So, I mean, let's talk about Joe Mixon. Let's talk about Tyler Boyd. Let's just talk about this Bengals offense as a whole. Am I overly excited about this?
I think you're just right excited about it. Well, first of all, you know, me and you, we could sit here and talk this entire show about Tyler Boyd. But I mean, I don't know. Maybe there's one person that might want to, maybe Tyler Boyd himself. I don't even know if his mama wants to hear it for that one. But the reason I always kind of assumed Joe Mixon would get his deal done was because he was very smart about it. Not the migraine stuff, which, I mean, it's kind of crappy if he was
even
lying about
that,
it.
That was smart, though. Like, he just didn't want to put onus on the team.
Yeah, but the fact that he went into negotiations saying, I want to be paid like a top 8 running back. He's not like, I want McCaffrey money. Because, man, the only person that's going to be able to say that is Saquon. I'm just going to put that out there. And, you know, Brian Haar from, you know, me and Trade Addict Superflex Super Show is calling Saquon the $20 million man because he thinks he's going to be the first running back to get that. Completely besides the point. But, like, Mixon came in realistic because, I mean, at the fantasy community, we all know what Joe Mixon can be. We know the potential. We know the talent. But in all honesty, he hasn't showed it that much on the field. He had a great second half of last year. And while the first half was trash and might not have been his fault, but it's tough for a running back to sell himself without production. And it wasn't there in the beginning of the year, even though that wasn't his fault. I'm going to stop repeating myself. But I kind of always felt like this was going to get done. And I'm very happy that it did because I don't know why, again, because it was coach speaking when there was nothing else to say. a few people from that front office came out and said, we want Joe Mixon to be the guy. We want him down. Like, we don't want to have to take him off the field. And they don't. I know Gio is there. They signed him pretty recent, like a year or two ago. They signed him. They extended him. So I don't think he's going to disappear. But I really do think this will be, I mean, I know calling it a career receptions year for Mixon means like 25, but I still think it will be more than we've seen from him. I really think this is going to be a great offense that's going to move a lot, and mostly because their defense is trash. And because I love every piece on that offense. Like, hashtag team Big Clemson wide receiver. Love T. Higgins. I am so happy that he's going to most likely sit this year and learn from A.J. Green and Auden Tate. And next year, when A.J. Green probably retires, he'll just jump over Auden Tate, because while I liked Auden Tate last year, he was a great replacement. But T. Higgins is the man. I'm sorry. Like, I could talk about him for about a good half hour. But now, like, I really think love that offense. And I'm like stuttering to think of the words. Enamored, I think, was the word that was about to come out of my mouth. Like, I'm a big fan of that Bengals offense.
I am too. I mean, detractors of Joe Mixon will say that he's never really showed lead efficiency throughout his career. In fact, if you compare his numbers to the recently released Leonard Fournette, they're not all that different. And when you actually look at some efficiency metrics of Joe Mixon, the only year that he recorded a success rate over average of the NFL, of the league, was in his rookie season in 2016. Since then, he's had a success rate at least negative half percentage point under the average of the league. Last year, it was actually negative 3 percentage points versus the league. And I do think that some of that maybe can be attributed to him, but as is the case with any running back, I mean, it's not just him. It's the fact that he's playing with a backup's backup at quarterback. It's the fact that he has no offensive lineman to speak of. It's the fact that it was him, Tyler Boyd, versus the world, literally the entire world of the NFL last season. So I do think that there is a lot of conceptual clues that you can kind of put around Joe Mixon's production to give yourself a better idea of what this guy could possibly be in ideal circumstances. And because of where this Bengals offense is as a whole right now, I think we're getting closer and closer to ideal circumstances than Joe Mixon has ever had throughout his career. So it's going to be very, very interesting to see if he justifies that $12 million contract per year. But I really do think that he will, because that ranks him about sixth, seventh in the NFL in terms of total RB compensation. And I do think that Joe Mixon's ceiling is the sixth or seventh best RB in the NFL. And the sixth or seventh best fantasy RB in the NFL if he starts to get some of those receptions.
Yeah, and you made the best point, I think, before for the offense as a total. They're all going to be around for a very long time now. Like, they have their guys at every position. Like, they don't need to worry about it. You know, they have Joe Mixon, they have Joe Burrow, they have Auden Tate and, T. Higgins and Tyler Boyd. Like, they have the basis of their offense, and all of them are locked up for at least 4 years. That's great for a young team. That's great for a young player. Now we just have to hope the coaching staff doesn't screw up and get fired and, you know, start turning over on Joe Burrow. Because, like, if they can gel, if they have that time, that consistency, they can turn into what it looks like they can turn into.
As a dynasty leader, trying to bet on these dynasty assets for the entire length of their careers, all you really want is consistency and continuity, because that at least allows you to project forward based on what that history has shown you so far. And that history holds more weight because it's the same types of players, the same situations that you're going to find going into the future. So I do really think that that is probably an underrated aspect of a lot of assets, and why maybe you should put a little bit extra weight. You should be a little bit more okay with a Derrick Henry, with a Joe Mixon, with these guys that are going to be in these systems with these teams for the long haul, just because there's so many of these other guys that aren't. And we've already seen what these guys can do in any type of a decent offense. So imagine that times 1,000, I think, going forward for the Cincinnati Bengals and for Joe Mixon as a whole. But here's the other side of that coin. Joe Mixon signed his contract. Joe Mixon is going to be on the field this year, but there's two guys we still don't really know about. Dalvin Cook, there hasn't been any news about Dalvin Cook really since Dalvin Cook announced that he wanted to be paid like a CMC type RB, that he wanted to be the next big earner at the position. And now it came out yesterday, I think, that Alvin Kamara is also planning to not necessarily play games this season until he signs a new contract. The holdout is kind of the word on the street from him. Josina Anderson just put out a tweet just a few minutes ago that the Saints are actually open to trading Alvin Kamara. And this is where it comes back to. It doesn't matter how good you think that running back is on that team that you drafted three, four seasons ago. It doesn't matter. Because the next year, that guy, you can get 75% of that guy's production, 80% of that guy's production for, what, a tenth of the price with the rookie wage scale, especially if you're not drafting these guys in round one. So it pays to not have to worry about that. It pays to not be in a constant rebuild. It pays to, again, have some level of consistency, of continuity on your team, so you know what you have and you know what you need to improve when you go into the offseason when you can start to buy vets a little bit cheaper. Russ, I wanted to ask you, I mean, first of all, let's talk about Alvin Kamara on the Saints, and then we can go to just kind of BSing at that point. I mean, is Alvin Kamara potentially going to be a trade candidate? Because, I mean, personally, if I was running an NFL team, every RB that was up for a contract extension would definitely be a trade candidate for me.
I think the one thing, as you know, fantasy managers, we don't take into account is fans, right? Like, the two things we need to think about for the Saints right now is, I think the fans would be pretty pissed off if a guy like Alvin Kamara walked. And also, this is Drew Brees' last year. I mean, at least, like we said it last year, you know, maybe it's his last year this year, but it seems like it is because he only signed a one-year deal. Are you going to trade Alvin Kamara away with the last year of Drew Brees if you're, what is it, Loomis? Is that the GM for the Saints?
Yep, Mickey Loomis.
Yeah. So, like, it would seem so weird. Like, I saw it and I kind of rolled my eyes. I'm like, well, I guess negotiations are getting a little tough. Like, because that's when you throw that out. Like, right? Like, anytime there's a running back holding out, yeah, we're open to trading him. That's fine. Just to, like, try and put a little fear in him. I don't think anyone ever believes that. Like, because you have to assume Alvin Kamara, even on his last year, when you know you're going to have to pay him later, you're going to expect a high draft pick coming to you. And who do you think is going to be willing to do that? That's the real question. You have to look around and say, who's going to give a first for Alvin Kamara for 1 year? And I think, like, you know, I know the Seahawks because they're my team. But like, they spent a lot for Jamal Adams, knowing that it's on his last year or two on his deal. But they had to talk with him. They said, we're going to play this out and then we'll figure it out later. Like, there needs to be some before communication. I think Kamara, especially because now he's looking for a deal, he's not going to go anywhere unless he knows he's getting it. Well, I guess technically he doesn't necessarily have a choice, but like, I think that's something that's going to be negotiated into the trade, because I can't imagine a team saying, yeah, we'll give you a first for Kamara and then have to pay him $16 million every year next year, starting next year. It's really tough to think of him being able to be traded. Again, like I've been saying, like crazy, I'll never pretend to know how the NFL money works. It's fake. It doesn't matter. So I'm sure someone can do it and will do it. But for the way my brain works, I don't get it. I don't think it's going to happen. But I also didn't really think Leonard Fournette was going to get cut. So what the hell do I know?
Yeah, I mean, it just with the current CBA as currently constructed, with the cap as currently constructed, this is going to be kind of the move every single time one of these discussions come up. And I don't think it's fair at all. It's not fair because these are the guys that are the target. They are the guys that people are targeting on every play to go ahead and take out. And they don't necessarily get to make as much earnings as some of the other guys that are playing the other positions on the field. I just think that it's a scenario where we're eventually going to get to a point where no one's going to want to play RB. If you have a touted high school recruit and he's doing well and he starts to play RB, I mean, you might want to talk to him and say, hey, you know, maybe you should look at safety. Hey, maybe you should look at some of these other positions. Not necessarily because you're not good at RB, but because RB isn't going to get you where you want to get in terms of being paid like these other top players. So I do think we're going to get to a point that something needs to change when it comes to how these teams evaluate their RBs. And I think at this point, when every RB signs a contract, whenever a new deal is signed, when Joe Mixon's deal was signed, Alvin Kamara was smiling. I think all the other RBs out there, Aaron Jones right now watching all these RBs get signed, he's smiling. He's just waiting because he knows at some point, I think we're going to have to kind of revert to where we've got before. And I always talk about overcorrection on this podcast. I think the market on RBs has overcorrected to the point that it's going to start having to go back just a little bit. And we're going to see these $12 million contracts. We're going to see $12 to $14 million kind of allocated for the top RBs in the league. And I think that's kind of where we'll be at before we get to a no RB is worth it all over again.
Yeah, I'll talk about real football and then fantasy football. Real football, again, while I have no idea how money works in the world or how CBA negotiations go, I really think like they need to make running back contracts bigger for rookies. It's the only real way to make this fair based on the fact that the NFL has caught on that you don't pay running backs and, you know, RBs don't matter, which has always been hyperbole in fantasy football, but it's real. It's true. And that's really not fair. It's really like, you know, the top 5-6, like the top 1%, let's just say, will get their pay, you know, Zeke Elliott and, I mean, Mixon got the sixth highest, but still great for his position, a very good amount of money. Like, running backs need to get paid more on their rookie contracts. But then the problem is you're going to get guys like Curtis Samuel, like Paris Campbell, like Antonio Gibson, that are all going to come as running backs instead of wide receivers, or like these guys that are gadget plays are all going to want to start coming out as running backs because that'll get them their pay. I understand it's not a realistic idea, but I feel like it needs to happen just to be fair to these guys.
That take the most punishment on the field.
Every play they're getting hit by something, like offensive line, defensive line, and then running back, tight ends and running backs. Like to me, that's the order of, cause you, if you're a quarterback, you can hand the ball off and get the hell out of the way. If you're a quarterback, like in a West Coast offense, you're not going to get hit that often because you're getting the ball out of your hands in 3 seconds, but that running back's still going to either go out for a pass, in which case a linebacker or a safety is going to get their hands on him. He's running the ball, in which case he's getting the crap knocked out of him. I mean, that's, I guess that's really it. Or he's blocking, in which case he's going to get the crap knocked out of him. Or he's diving at some guy, because let's face it, most running backs can't really block defensive linemen. They're not size. I mean, like, that matters a little bit. Yeah. So again, like, I can't fix the real NFL contract, at least on my own for right now. You know, I'll work on it later. But fantasy football wise, I think I've gotten to the point where I will buy running backs at 2 times. Well, buy is the wrong word. I will draft them in rookie drafts, like we were saying before, but also I've started buying running backs right after they got paid. Like, I bought a bunch of Zeke. If I'm going to go buy a bunch of Mixon, because I know, like, everyone's like, oh, 4 years and they're done, second contracts and they're done. And they'll bring up like Todd Gurley. And that's not really fair, because I know he just got paid, but he got paid and then got a bad knee injury and he had, you know, degeneration in his knee. It's a little coincidence. Like, we know running backs get hurt, but the timing is pure coincidence. Like, selling Zeke Elliott for a discount right now to me is insane. But I bought him kind of cheaply in my mind once or twice already in this non-point scoring season. So, like, because people are afraid. And yes, you run the risk of them just tanking in value. But if you get a championship out of it, does it matter? Like, that's the point of this game in the long run, is to win. And me, you know, the trade addict who's always worried about value, I do want to win every once in a while. It is my life goal to win a league that I run, because I've literally never done it before. I've been playing fantasy football for about 15 years. Never won a league I run.
And that's the balance in fantasy football. I mean, you want to keep your competitive window open as long as you possibly can. But I'm not saying that running backs aren't good picks. I'm just saying that in order to do that, the way to do that that makes sense for me and that I think kind of makes sense for anyone looking at this holistically is to open that championship window as wide as you can and then try to figure out the rest and then try to figure out how to catch on a spike years from running back X or running back Y or this guy that nobody's really paying attention to, like a Kenyon Drake or Raheem Mostert or James White that 1 year. Catch that one guy, have one or two rookie backs to kind of make sure that everything on your team is treading water at the running back position. And then you can really, really push the boat out everywhere else and have studs at every other position and win that way. That, I think, just gives you the best opportunity to win, because it gives you the longest amount of time to get it right. And it is only a 1 in 12 odds, 1 in 16 odds, 1 in 14 odds, whatever you play anyway. So, I mean, let's talk about those rookie running backs that you should be drafting right now. Obviously, I mean, I always lean just very, very heavily into uncertainty. I think that's one of the main ways that I, as a fantasy gamer, I, as a dynasty gamer, find a way to get a step up on the league, because people are scared of certain situations, like you mentioned, Russ. And I think those situations end up giving you the biggest rewards because they're the riskiest. It's like any investment that you would do anywhere else. The risky investments are going to provide you the best rewards. The non-risky investments, even if you win that investment, what did you really gain from that? So I'm always looking at these situations where people don't necessarily know what's going to happen. People don't know what's going to happen right now with Cam Akers. People don't know for sure what's going to happen with DeAndre Swift, even though he's come back from his injury. People don't know for sure what's going to happen between J.K. Dobbins and Mark Ingram right now. So I,
well, I know what's going to happen there.
I think that there's value on the table there. And I get that. I get that a lot of people have really, really high excitement for these rookies, but we've seen this play out in both ways over the last few seasons. I think people are spoiled because in the last couple of seasons, we've seen a lot of these rookies break out, get handed full workloads immediately, and kind of just go to work for their teams. But that's not necessarily always the case. I mean, let's talk about J.K. Dobbins. That word on the street right now is J.K. Dobbins is an incredible pass catcher to go along with what he can do in the running game and how explosive he was at Ohio State. Mark Ingram is the team captain on the Baltimore Ravens. He's literally the team captain of the Baltimore Ravens, one of the team captains on the offense. So whether or not J.K. Dobbins gets a full workload or gets a workload that's going to pay his cost this season, I think, is a question mark for me, even though I think the talent is not something you would question. I would probably put put DeAndre Swift into that same sort of boat because – yeah, you expect him to eventually take that job, but there is significant pathways for him to not necessarily do that within the first 8 to 10 games of the season. So where are you at on that?
All right, real quick, I don't even know if you're doing this on purpose, but you're tying like your complete like guideline of building a team together. And I don't know if you're doing it on purpose, but like you build a safe net of wide receivers so you can take this risk on running backs. And like, You were just talking about it, and in my head, I'm like, yeah, you're right. But if you can do that, you want to be safe with your running, with your wide receiver. You said that already. Good for you. Yes, exactly. Like, you want your solid, you want Tyler Boyd and me, like Devontae Adams. I love first round wide receivers. Like, you want those guys so you can take your risk on these running backs. And it's not the worst thing if you miss. But getting into the more specifics. J.K. Dobbins was my favorite running back coming into this year. I acknowledge that he's not the best, but he's still my favorite. I think he will take over that backfield probably before the end of the season, but if not next year, it's 100% his. I really think the Ravens love the person Mark Ingram. Like, remember last year how much he just loved Lamar Jackson, and he was that man. He was his hype man for the entire year. And you know, that actually had an effect on Lamar. Like, cause he had like, okay, I don't have the brain of a professional football player. The idea of starting in the NFL is freaking terrifying for me. I don't know if it was for Lamar Jackson, but having that guy behind you just being like, no, this guy's the truth. This guy has it. This guy is going into the Hall of Fame. He should be there this year already. And you're just like, yeah, I should be. Yeah, man. Like, I really think that they love Mark Ingram, the person, as a locker room presence. And yes, he absolutely should be a captain for that reason. But the dude's 31. I know he has a lot of tread left because, man, like, Sean Payton just hated him for some reason and never let him get the workload that he should have. So I do still think he has a little bit of freshness to him. But man, you don't draft J.K. Dobbins not to let him go nuts, because that dude's good. And it is, first of all, mobile quarterback always leads to better running back stats. Plus, with a good offensive line and good offensive weapons otherwise, you know, Miles Boykin season, let's go. I think Dobbins is just going to, pun intended, run away with it.
Yeah, and I mean, he's one of those interesting players that I think you can go ahead and pair with a guy like Raheem Mostert. I think Raheem Mostert will give you those starting 8 weeks, those starting 9 weeks, while J.K. Dobbins and Mark Ingram figure it out. And then at the end of the season, you have what we got from Nick Chubb just a few seasons ago, and you're able to just have this RB1 stud kind of not from out of nowhere, but that wasn't necessarily the main guy being put into that role and giving you those big weeks at the end of the season to get you through your playoffs. So that, I think, is a perfect, like, floor-ceiling play in terms of being safe. And I don't think something like that is going to cost you a whole lot in Dynasty Leagues.
Well, yeah, especially this year. The picks were expensive, so it's not like it's cheap. But, like, you got in a Superflex League, which is, you know, what I do, so all I really talk. I mean, you got Dobbins at what, 105-ish? I mean, that's late for that good of a running back in that good of a situation. And that's awesome there was a lot of good people in front of him. If your league is smart, they took Burrow and Tua before then. And then, man, CEH in the perfect landing spot. Jonathan Taylor, who's just freaking awesome behind the best offensive line in the league. And like you said, Swift, I mean, maybe he's a better talent. He's at least seen as more well-rounded, as a better receiver and runner than Dobbins, though I think Dobbins might be a better runner, pure runner, but that's not really the argument right now. So, like, there's just a lot of people in front of him, so it seems like you can get a guy like Dobbins, and you mentioned Akers before, cheaper, because people want Jonathan Taylor and they want Clyde Edwards-Helaire because they are going to walk in, especially now with Williams out. And then people talking like Mac's going to do something. I'm sorry. But like, look, if you see Jonathan Taylor looks like a linebacker. Come on. Imagine him running behind Quentin Nelson. That's the manliest thing I've ever thought of in my entire life. Like, I want to watch that and hear both of them screaming on the top of their lungs as they run over everybody. That's just going to, but like, people think like Swift and Dobbins and Akers are in cloudy positions like you were talking about before. And yes, soak all that up so you don't have to pay JT and CEH prices. But you know what? There's a good chance you're getting, if not the same 90% to maybe 110%. Because, like, again, I love Dobbins. So I think he could be great, especially in that great offense. So it's worth the risk. You know, like you said, if there's no risk, then there's no, I guess not, there's not no reward, but there's no profit.
Outside rewards. There's no huge amount of profit. You profit, but it's not the profit that's going to allow you to go ahead and retire and like, buy that island in the Caribbean and live out the rest of your life that way. That's what we're going for in these dynasty leagues.
Yeah. We want to buy a stock at a dollar and let it, you know, sell it at 500. We don't want to buy it at 495.
Absolutely. I think some of the more concerning situations with RBs outside of the rookies, because the rookies at least have that profile of being a rookie. We've looked at these guys for a year. We're excited to see them perform. So that in itself is going to inflate prices just a little bit, even if there's some uncertainty about whether or not these guys are going to start game one, so on and so forth. But, I mean, I think with RBs, you also have this understanding that there's the second cloudy level of RB that people don't necessarily want to touch, but can also give you that huge reward as well. Chase Edmonds is one that is very, very much talked about on a lot of shows, and we've said his name before. Yeah. I mean, in Chase Edmonds, one opportunity last year, he blew the doors off Arizona. I just talked about on another show not too long ago on the Undroppables that I think came out today, that, I don't even know where I was going. Lost it. But I think I just talked about Undroppables on Undroppables the other day that there are situations that you can find that don't necessarily need to make sense. I think Arizona is one of those situations that doesn't necessarily make sense when it comes to looking at what Kenyon Drake was able to do behind an offensive line that you don't think any running back should be able to do anything behind. And it's the simple fact that that offensive line in that particular team, in that particular setup, doesn't matter. They run so many plays, so there's the volume there. And then on top of running that amount of plays, they spread you out so often with those four wide receiver sets that there's big holes regardless of whether or not that offensive line can really hold up. And that's what a guy who gets out in space with speed like Drake, like Edmonds, can do. If Drake goes down, Chase Edmonds is getting the full workload. Cliff Kingsbury has come out and said that. If Melvin Gordon goes down, Philip Lindsay is getting that full workload. The team has said that. In fact, they're even saying that Philip Lindsay actually might even be the top half of that RB group going into the first couple of games of the season just because of what Melvin Gordon has done during the offseason. There's reports that he's been out of shape, so on and so forth. But that's another ambiguous situation that I think you can definitely profit from. And if you look closer at some of the rosters around the league, you can find these situations where there's these guys that have next to no value right now that honestly you can trade. Probably a second round pick would be overpaying. that can give you that RB1 production. I think Matt Breda and Jordan Howard, if Leonard Fournette doesn't come there, one of those guys is going to be another one that is going to give you, what, an RB13 season? Like, no one's going to be mad with an RB13 season. Again, if you have Adams and DJ Moore and Cortland Sutton and a bunch of these other wide receivers that you know you can count on from week to week. So I think you play the probabilities with running back, and then you figure out where to get those baseline building blocks on your team elsewhere. Do you have another running back that's kind of in an ambiguous situation that you'd be spending on?
Well, I mean, a lot of the guys behind the people we were talking about until today, Gio was a huge one. And I still believe a little bit in Travion Williams, though he was supposed to be Gio's replacement before they extended him. And I really wish Rodney Anderson worked out. I'm sad that he can't get healthy.
I agree.
Plant a flag in Buffalo. I know they're going to split. They really are. And I hate the people that are so down on Singletary because, oh, well, now Moss is there. Gore carried the ball a lot last year. I don't think people realize that he had like 225 touches. Like, that'd be really good for Moss to walk into. Like, do you really think he's getting more than that? And even if he does, Singletary was insanely efficient with the touches that he had. So getting 175 carries, 50, 60 targets leading to like maybe 30, 40 catches. Again, great RB2 season. It's all about expectations. Not like you're grabbing Chase Edmonds. You don't expect him to be a running back one, but the thing is, Kenyon Drake's in a boot. He was in a boot last year. He missed some time last year. Unfortunately, so did Chase Edmonds. But like you said, when he was in there, he killed it. Philip Lindsay, again, like everyone just pronounced him dead the second Melvin Gordon went there. That's wrong. Like, I really feel like that's wrong. I can't say it's wrong because I don't really know, because that could just be coach speak. But it always seems like it's a smart move to split the backfield of everywhere pretty much, because Melvin Gordon has ankle issues at the end of almost every single year. So why not, if you think you're the playoff team, slow him down a little bit? You know, you don't need to give him the Todd Gurley numbers, which leads to Todd Gurley getting a knee injury. And if we want to just completely connect things that aren't connectable, which people seem to do with Gurley in the contracts, bringing that back up. At the top of my head, I can't really think of anyone else that's like super ambiguous. I think it might be a good season for Tariq Cohen because of, at least Montgomery's going to miss the first week or two. And that team just seems to be getting a little worse as time goes on, though. You know, you and I are both big Allen Robinson fans, and I hope Anthony Miller takes that step again. Like, he was doing really well at the end of last year, but that offensive line isn't great. So they might need to dump it off even more. And especially if they go with Nick Foles, who, I mean, he's bad, but Foles just isn't great either. So there might be a lot of dump offs. So, I mean, there's him, and I didn't think of it, but I always usually have a picture that has all the NFL logos, so I know, like, I could look at teams real quick and make me think of situations. Because you said they're really good ones. But I'll say it, Seattle. I mean, there's a couple of good places.
Hyde is being undervalued right now. People don't understand what Pete Carroll is going to do with his offense. By now, they're not going to get it. I think Chris Carson is still kind of an injury risk at that point. Right?
Oh, he's always an injury risk. The thing is, like, he came out today and said he's 100% healthy, which to me is great because he shouldn't have been by now. And if he is, of course, as a Seahawks fan, I'd love it. But the thing is, he gets hurt a lot. And Carlos Hyde is okay. DJ Dallas is athletic. He can catch the ball. Well, the Seahawks don't usually pass out of the backfield that much.
I feel like they've been trying to get that player for so long now with McKissick.
Let's go DJ Procise, man, right?
DJ Procise, man. They've been trying.
He was the next David Johnson. Come on. I don't expect DJ Dallas to be great or anything, but like, he could be a flex play. Like, that's what the expectations you have to have out of this. And would it be great if they turn out to be the next David Johnson? Of course, that'd be great. But, you know, keep your, you know, you're going to pay a third for this guy. Keep it down, buddy. Who else is, I mean, anyone in San Francisco, because who knows who the real guy is going to be. I own Tevin everywhere, so I really hope that happens. And, oh man, Jet McKinnon. Let's make it happen this year, Jet. Stay healthy. Do
just
well.
For a couple of games. I just want to see it happen.
Let me see it, right? And I feel like 49ers fans at least just want to see it once or twice for the amount of money he got. Who else? I mean, Las Vegas scares me a little bit. I'm going to be honest. Josh Jacobs has a little bit of an injury history, and they just don't seem to want to throw him the ball. So I am all about Lynn Bowden Jr. because Jalen Richard is just so meh. And Bowden is so athletic and can do literally everything.
The thing that worries me about looking into a situation like Las Vegas, though, is I think a lot of those running backs behind Josh Jacobs cannot do what Josh Jacobs does. They can't run between the tackles. They can
catch, but they
can't run between the tackles. So if you're looking at a guy who, kind of like Derrick Henry, has the full workload when it comes to the workload on the ground, if Josh Jacobs is healthy, I understand you saying maybe his target share is going to go down, or maybe he's not going to get nearly as many targets as he did last year, or he's not going to improve that. Fine, but he also has probably pretty decent odds at leading the league in rushing in the same way Derrick Henry did,
absolutely,
because he's going to have that opportunity.
All right, let's see who else real quick. No. Wow, there actually is a lot of locked up backfields. And I mean, we talked about the Lions where, man, like, it's funny. Like, it's the same thing with Mac. Like, nobody liked Mac until JT went there. And all of a sudden, everyone thinks Mac's going to be great. Kerryon was left for dead until Swift went there. And everyone's like, oh, but Kerryon's in the way. Calm down, guys. What do you think about the Jacksonville backfield right now? Do you think any of that matters is the real question?
I know that J.J. Zach Reeson wrote an article of basically the anatomy of identifying breakout running backs, and a few things are positive and a few things are negative when it comes to Jacksonville. One of the things in that article that J.J. really points to is the fact that these running backs are not handcuffs. They were not handcuffs for Leonard Fournette. No one was handcuffing Ozigbo or Raquel Armstead for Leonard Fournette. If you were, I don't really know.
I have
know
so
what
many
to
Armstead and Ozigbo shares, going to be honest.
But it wasn't a handcuff. It was like a maybe something happens type of thing. It wasn't, well, this guy is in tandem with this guy. If this guy goes down, he's going to get all the work. It wasn't that.
No.
So, one, they're not handcuffs. Number two, these guys are good pass catchers, which would mean good things for Chris Thompson. But I think the most important part of that article is he actually said in the article, this is all great. The most important things is that these breakout running backs tend to come from good offenses. And a lot of the fervor around Leonard Fournette, a lot of the discounting of Leonard Fournette surrounded the fact that he was on such a terrible offense. I think that offense got worse, if that was even possible now. So if you're looking at one of these guys being the next breakout running back, I think we're missing a big part of the selection. But whether or not you can get an RB2 somewhere there, I don't think that's a problem. I think that's something you can definitely do.
Yeah, the other two that I just pulled up are Washington, which who the hell knows? All I know is every time someone has tried to – anytime someone has tried to put a young running back in front of Peyton Barber, he has shown them what's up. Peyton Barber doesn't go away. And I love saying that, especially because Adrian Peterson's there too. Like, I feel like you can get a cheap flag in that backfield. And maybe you're right. Maybe you're wrong. Honestly, the one person I wouldn't try and buy right now is Gibson, because it's ridiculous what he's going for. Because again, he could be the next David Johnson. Like, that, I don't know if that's a thing. Like, it hasn't happened in 5 years. There's a reason.
David Johnson was the next David Johnson for one season. People like
he also got hurt. Yeah.
One season has happened.
Yeah, but that led me to a championship, so I'm always going to remember it, because that was the same year as Mike Evans, and I had both of them. Speaking of Mike Evans, Tampa Bay, man, I want all the Dare Ogunbowale, because he's James White, right? Like, but he's bigger, I think. I mean, I don't really know, but at least he looks bigger. I'm not big into Rojo. I'm not big into Keyshawn Vaughn, but man, like, who knows? That's the thing right now. And Ogunbowale is the cheapest, and he's the pass catcher. And that always worked for James White. He never really ran the ball. He just caught the ball, and that's fine. And again, Tampa Bay's defense is bad. So while they're not going to throw the amount Jameis Winston had to throw, because let's face it, he created more offense for them by turning it over all the time. Tom Brady won't do that, but I still think you can probably get a solid RB3 for absolutely nothing in Ogunbowale.
Yeah, I would say that is definitely a possibility. And then, I mean, on top of that, look, what happens if Leonard Fournette ends up in a situation like the Tampa Bay Buccaneers? I mean, isn't that kind of the dream spot of every rookie running back this offseason? Everyone was hoping that they would go to Tampa Bay. There could be a situation where, I mean, a guy that's a ground and pound that's going to get those 1 yard touchdowns that maybe Tom Brady just doesn't want to hoard anymore because he's a 75-year-old man. Maybe he gets those 1 yard touchdowns along with being on a team with a positive game script that's probably going to run more often than they have ever previously, because, like you said, Jameis Winston's no longer there to completely ruin their game script. So there is always just the possibility of something happening at running back in a way that you just don't see with the wide receiver position. People are saying wide receiver's deep, and I think in some respects it is, but in terms of consistent top 12 talent, even if it's only a few points that separate this tier from this tier, I mean, you know, just starting, just picking, just figuring out who to start on a week-to-week basis is difficult when it comes to those guys, and I think that people don't factor that in when looking at what they're saying is the deep, deep class that is at wide receiver right now. I think there's a lot of these guys that you can speculate about and you can be happy with, and you know, you think you're going to be able to get some decent season-long numbers end-of-year production with, but you don't want to start Will Fuller every game. Like, that's not something you want to do because you just don't think that's going to happen. And I think people are confusing that with what they perceive they're losing at running back.
Yeah, their depth at wide receiver is great. Let's first of all be honest. The problem is exactly like you said. Do you want to try and figure out who the wide receiver three on a certain team is going to be that week? And if they have a good slot, you know, good slot corner that they're playing against or not, like, there's a lot that goes into that. Like, picking who's going to score at running back is usually not that difficult.
But it's the guy that's playing running back.
Yeah, right. Exactly. Unless you're the Patriots, in which case it's the guy you thought wasn't going to be because screw the Patriots at fantasy football. Always Brandon Bolden. Except for when the one time you're like, I'm going to be smart and play him in DFS. And then Stephen Ridley scores touchdowns. Wide receiver is great because the thing is you can start a wide receiver two and not be far-fetched with the idea that you can get wide receiver one production from those guys for a like week-to-week basis. Like Terry McLaurin or Calvin Ridley or, I mean, Tyler Boyd's actually wide receiver 31 in August, which is
ridiculous.
I mean, that's great if we could buy him at that price, right? But like, you can play them every single week and you're going to get pretty safe wide receiver production. You're probably going to get at least 12 to 15 points, but man, you get a chance at 30 anytime you play those guys, especially like Ridley loves catching touchdowns. Tyler Boyd has any game can end up catching 15 passes. Like, so these are the kinds of guys, and Terry McLaurin, again, he's the only really guy to catch the ball. There's these guys that you don't have to pay that price for that will settle somewhere in that wide receiver two area at the end of the season. But chances are that's because they are going to score a couple of wide receivers, 6 and 7, but they're never really going to go below 24, 25. Running back, it's not that safe. It's not that easy. First of all, running backs are more likely to get hurt in the game, in which case starting a guy doesn't always work well. And, you know, you could be starting Rojo and he can get pulled because he missed a blitz pickup. Like, there's so many more reasons for running backs not to work out. And besides, you're never really going to start running whoever the random running back 23 is right now and really good about the idea that you're going to get a running back 6 game out of him. Like that to me is the biggest difference on arguing the depth at wide receiver. Maybe that is me saying, man, if you think you're going to win a championship this year, go buy Saquon. And like, that's kind of what, like what I said before, what I've been doing a little bit. Maybe it's, I did buy one Saquon share just so I could say I did it. But like, I've been aiming for people like Zeke and Gurley and Gordon, these guys that just got paid that people are kind of afraid of because they're a little older, but still have an easy path to all this production. Because that's what you need to do. Like we said from the beginning, that's what you need to do when you're winning. And it's, again, built around me having strong depth with a safe floor and a high ceiling at wide receiver because we love guys like Allen Robinson, Tyler Boyd, Calvin Ridley, Sutton, Juju, like all these guys.
DK, yeah. I mean, there's a lot of guys that you can kind of build that safe spot on your team for. And I think that all we're saying in all of this is you're going to have to rebuild in Dynasty. You can rebuild from the ground up or you can rebuild on the fly. Having running backs is going to mean that you're going to burn bright and burn out very, very quick.
All right, no, hold on. I can even fix that to really prove our point even better. Because the Trade Addicts leagues, at least, you only have to start a minimum of one per position, which means you could start like 6 or 7. Let's say you're a team that's built around running backs and you're starting like 5 running backs. And the problem is, like we said from the beginning, there's going to be a time where they're going to hold out. They're going to, you know, get cut, get traded, which seems to actually happen a lot. It's not like we're being catastrophic in any way or hyperbolic in any way. This happens every single year. You're going to have to rebuild, like you just said, because that team is going to shine bright and then poof. But if you have five or six wide receivers and two stud running backs, wide receiver value year to year is much more stable than running back value. You'll be the word I love to use is retooling, because if you're stuck, right, stuck is the wrong word. If you're loaded with DK Metcalf and Cortland Sutton, and yeah, you may have an AJ Green or something, but it's easy. Like we said, there's depth at wide receiver, so you can replace AJ Green easier. But the thing is, you have stable pieces for 3 to 4 years. And then if you're thinking more than 3 years out anyway, then that's just, you need to fix that. But you have these stable pieces that you never need to fully rebuild, because their value is going to stay close to the same. We're never going to say that everyone's, that they're going to stay the same year to year. You hope it gets more, to be honest, but man, yeah, maybe they go down a little, but it's a lot easier for wide receiver value to go back up than it is for running back value. Because wide receiver value, again, you're happy with a wide receiver two season. No one's ever really happy with a running back two season out of a guy they thought they'd get running back one numbers out of.
Absolutely, because the cost to acquire that running back is so high. These wide mm-hmm. receivers you can get at a lower cost, or you can get on when you're actually in your startup drafts and not have to really wonder and make speculative bids on these guys and use high draft picks going forward to acquire some stable production. So that's all we're talking about there. Mm-hmm. But that will lead us to the end of what we were talking about this week with our 5 point that really is never, ever 5 point. I should never probably change the name of that, because there's always like 16 points.
It's such an on-brand title, though. It's just so good.
Well, we're going to go into what the people are here for, what the people want, which is the Dynasty Diagnostic itself. And I'd like to go ahead and thank Andrew Cano for giving us this roster. Mr. Cano out there, please go ahead and make sure that you are sending us those rosters at Dynasty Diagnostic, at Dino Diagnostic on Twitter. Go ahead and DM us and you can get on the show. But this seems to me to be a super flex roster. It looks like it's a 12-team league, so let's get right into it. It's pretty stacked, I'm going to warn you, but we're going to have some interesting conversations about some of the players on this team. So at quarterback, we have Deshaun Watson and Nick Foles. It looks like they still have Andrew Luck. I think they're going to cut in pretty soon. P.J. Walker's on the roster as well. Hey, man, I'm with you with P.J. Walker. I know everyone's been saying things about Teddy Bridgewater, and I hope it happens, but if it doesn't, man, give P.J. Walker a shot. But, I mean, let's start at quarterback. Deshaun Watson, Nick Foles, Andrew Luck. I think you'll understand from the other parts of this team that maybe there was fewer resources invested here. But with Deshaun Watson and with Nick Foles, do you think that you do need to go out and make a quarterback move? Or is Deshaun Watson's ceiling kind of preventing you from going out there and spending too much to upgrade that second spot, knowing that you have a sure thing in Deshaun?
I love Deshaun Watson. He is, again, I don't really do rankings, but I'll call him probably my QB3 at this point.
I mean, that's factually incorrect, because Dak Prescott is QB3, but that's neither here nor there.
He's my four. I mean, it's not the biggest difference. Let's also put that out there. He has a really two games a season that dude disappears for. I think the move I would make instead, I don't have a show sheet, so I don't actually know the rest of this guy's team. So this is really, no, don't send it to me, because I actually like what we're doing. Instead of bulking up at QB2, see if I can go get two lesser, like if I can go get Daniel Jones and Josh Allen, or even, man, like Jimmy Garoppolo, I don't hate. Like
Ryan Tannehill.
Exactly. Like if you can somehow get those two, like if you have to throw a little more in just because someone doesn't like giving up two quarterbacks, it's a very specific team you'll have to find that can do that. I mean, even throw Foles in, because who the hell cares? Even if he's the quarterback with the Bears.
Just go find John. He'll do it for you.
Yeah. Or just go buy Trubisky, right? So either way, you have the Bears quarterback. no, don't do that. I think that's probably the move I would make, not knowing the rest of this team, unless you are completely stacked somewhere else. But again, I love Watson, and selling him is not something I would normally do. But yeah, super flex. You need more than what you have. And I would love to be able to sell Watson and whatever else for two QBs and still have Foles in my pocket in case we need him?
This is a question I'm actually really excited to ask you, because I think maybe I might be against the grain on this guy, but I see it as overblown. We talked about this earlier. We talked about Kenyon Drake and what Kenyon Drake was in that Arizona offense. But they only signed him for a year. And we just talked about the fleeting nature of running back value year over year. This guy has Saquon Barkley and Kenyon Drake as his two starting running backs. I think those are very, very good starting running backs. But I think that Kenyon Drake's value is probably over and ahead of what his actual production is, even if it's not necessarily the season, his production over the course of his career, because after the season, I'm unsure about what's going to happen next. So for me, I would probably be pulling the trigger on thinking about moving Kenyon Drake for maybe a more stable asset, or maybe one of these guys in these strange situations that we don't know about, as well as a pick to go ahead and restock and retool somewhere else. What's your take on Kenyon Drake? Again, assuming that this guy is, like I said, his roster is decently stacked, so he could go for the chip this year.
Yeah, again, like you just pointed out in your last statement, if you're going for it, Kenyon Drake's the perfect piece. He probably is a one-year asset, at least value dynasty value-wise, because, again, it's a one-year deal, which means that uncertainty is going to drop his value. But he did really well when he was running the ball in Arizona, and even if they do more of a split with Chase Edmonds, the point you made before, they want to run the most plays humanly possible, in which case Drake will still be on the field a lot more than a lot of these slower teams. Like, yeah, Derrick Henry is going to run every single time Tennessee runs the ball, but Drake still might have more snaps than he does, even if he shares the field, just because Tennessee wants to slow the game down. That's what they do with that kind of running back. So I love Kenyon Drake as a this year piece for my running back squad. If I am saying, okay, I'm a little off on a quarterback, so maybe I should take a step back, Kenyon Drake's the perfect piece to pair with Deshaun Watson to go get two young quarterbacks. Because I don't know if I like Saquon as much as I really do, or if it's been seeped into me by Brian Haar, but like, there's no reason to ever think Saquon's going to slow down in the next 3 years. Like, the dude played through a high ankle sprain at such a high level, like that shouldn't have been humanly possible. So like, you don't really need to, it's not like you need to get rid of him, even if you're rebuilding right now. Because the way you're talking, he has a stacked enough roster where it's not like that's the only piece he can sell. So depending on the direction you want to go, I would say either keep Drake and we'll see what the hell is the rest of your roster. Or I love, the more I'm saying it out loud, the more I love the idea of packaging Watson and Drake and getting two quarterbacks and see what else you can fill in at running back at the last minute, because you'll be able to fill a running back in at the last minute.
With David Johnson, Jordan Howard, and Chase Edmonds on the roster, does that change your mind about what to do with Kenyon at all?
Yeah, I'm fine selling Kenyon Drake then, because you'll be able to piece together a running back every single week out of those guys.
Absolutely. And that's what we're talking about at the start of this podcast. Get stable somewhere else. You cannot get stable at running back outside of like three guys. So don't try it unless you have a CMC or a Saquon or a Zeke or a Mixon now. But I mean, there's like five guys maybe that you can pretty much call sure things at running back. Everything else is wishy-washy. So
build. And there's a Drake guy in every single league. There's a Drake guy. Hopefully it's not you, because if that is, then I'm sorry for telling you to sell him. But if there's another one, there someone's going to pay the valuation of an early first.
Someone's going to give you a first round. Absolutely.
Yeah. So I would absolutely take advantage of that. And assuming your wide receiver and tight ends are as stacked as Eitan is making it seem like it's going to be, I would feel so easy about doing it. Especially if you don't have to start two running backs. I don't know if you said that.
It's a start two running back.
That's a little rougher, but still, I'd be fine piecing together my RB2 with those pieces.
All right, so at wide receiver, Adam Thielen, Tyler Lockett, Brandon Cooks, and then we go into Robbie Anderson, Kenny Stills, Anthony Miller, some more speculative guys, so on and so forth. But I think you do have a solid top three. I don't think that it's news at this point that Adam Thielen, especially with not much news out of Minnesota Vikings in terms of what Justin Jefferson is doing. I think he might have been injured and not necessarily being that number two receiver. I think they have B.C. Johnson as the number two receiver right now. I think he's going to be there in three wide receiver sets, which that team doesn't run all that often at the beginning of the year. I think it's easy to see how Adam Thielen is probably poised to be amongst the top three league lead in terms of total targets. And I think that you might not be able to get anything for him going forward.
Yes.
It might crash and burn next season, like as soon as next season. I don't think it will, but there's a chance that it will because of age and everything that you would put together with that in that calculation. However, I think he is going to be a top eight receiver this year. I would not be surprised if he found his way higher than that. Behind him, Tyler Lockett can easily be a top 12 receiver. I think we saw that last season until Tyler Lockett got hurt. And I do think that Brandon Cooks or Will Fuller, one of those guys is going to go down. And if Brandon Cooks is the guy that goes down, I think Will Fuller is going to go off. Will Fuller is the guy that goes down, I think Brandon Cooks is going to go off. I think one of those guys is going to have a really, really good connection with a deep ball thrower like a Deshaun Watson that's going to provide you solid wide receiver two numbers with wide receiver one upside pretty much on a game-to-game basis. So, I mean, do you think that you need to add to this receiver room?
I wouldn't hate it if you did. I just, at this point, don't know how you would. I do love those three wide receivers. Depth is kind of crushing, going to be honest. Like, once those bye weeks hit, you might be a little in trouble. So I think I might go back on my original statement. I think you might want to work on retooling this team a little bit. So I would, man, like, you have so many stacks you can sell right now. Like, if you have a team that's super competing and you stack Watson and Will Fuller, who no one... Not no one. I hate talking in absolutes. Most people don't really have faith in him, but if you find that one guy that you can say, yo, you're going to win, you have a good chance at winning this championship. Let me give you Deshaun Watson. And for those 6 to hopefully 12, 13 games where Will Fuller is healthy, I'm going to give you 30 points a game right there for, out of Will Fuller, because that's what he seems to do. Healthy for 6 games, 30 points every game he's healthy for. Like that's not real, but that's not a hard sell. Like that's such to me, like, man, so many, like, even if you wanted to package Drake and Edmonds to start moving stuff around, I do love Cooks. He's always way undervalued, but it's even worse now. Because again, Deshaun Watson's really good and Brandon Cooks is really good. So why wouldn't they be really good together? It's, everyone's just saying, oh, because he's not DeAndre Hopkins. No, no one's DeAndre Hopkins except for T. Higgins in a few years, but that's not the point. I even caught myself on that one. But going back to Thielen, like you said, man, like maybe you turn him too. But the thing is, well, first of all, question, has Justin Jefferson at the very beginning of this, the COVID list, he was put on there. Was he ever taken off? I don't remember ever seeing that. Like, that's why I think.
I just don't know of any news really that I've heard from Justin Jefferson's camp at all. I haven't heard about Justin Jefferson. I haven't heard about Jerry Jeudy. I've heard about every other rookie receiver.
Oh, there's so much hype about Jerry Jeudy catching balls in practice. It's ridiculous. Like, oh, look at this catch he made. We're going to put a sizzle reel together. And literally it's just catches of him having to extend his arms to catch the ball. I'm just like, well, maybe Locke should have thrown it closer. I don't know what to tell you. The thing with Thielen, and the thing that I call it the Dez paradox, where Dez was such a good wide receiver one for so long that once he wasn't anymore, he was dead to people. But he was,
and it didn't matter if he was putting up wide receiver two seasons.
Right. He was a good wide receiver two for like a year and a half before he got hurt, and him and Dak just, their play styles don't mesh. So he really did just sort of disappear, but that had nothing to do with age or anything. Like, he wasn't great at separating anymore. And Dak throws timing routes and he throws to guys that are open. But like Thielen, you're right, can absolutely be maybe third in targets, because let's face it, Devontae Adams and Michael Thomas probably still have the 1 and 2 spots.
Adams and Michael Thomas are going to get half the targets thrown in the NFL this year.
And the thing is, next year, if Justin Jefferson does become the guy, Diggs and Thielen have always done well next to each other, not always at the same time, but which has always been hugely frustrating. But Thielen can be a solid wide receiver too. Yeah, he's 31, but you know, he didn't really start playing till he was 27. So that, does it matter? Like, this is the Ingram argument. Yeah, but not as much as normal. So you have a lot of very good pieces. If you can get good on some of these trades in here, like, the thing is, you need to decide right now which direction you want to go. You can't half-ass this. Like, you know, never half-ass two things. If you need to go all in or you need to step back. If you're going all in, well, first, what's the tight end room look like? Let's hit that first.
That's why I said this team is stacked. The tight end room is led by Mr. Mark Andrews. So I don't think you have to worry about tight end anytime soon.
Right.
And I do think you even have a tight end. I think Mark Andrews this time next year will probably be looked at in the same light as Travis Kelce, as George Kittle. I really do think he's that good. And he almost counts as another wide receiver to me because of the advantage that he gives you at the tight end position.
He'll be three for sure at the end of next year, just because, I mean, Ertz is getting that age discount at this point, even though every year Ertz is gone. Goddard's going to be the guy, but it's still Ertz every single year. But, man, like, I like the idea of Evan Engram, but I'm not going to put him at tight end four or five like he is for everyone until I see him be on the field. It's just, and again, like with Engram, he was the greatest when there was no one else to catch the ball. So the combination of age, offense, and talent easily puts Andrews as a top three, four tight ends, because there's going to be one guy that's going to do awesome this year that we don't see coming. Or to be, we, there was a bold take show.
For, I mean, there's going to be one of like 15 guys that we see coming.
Yeah, that's the problem. There was a hot take show. I think it was for the Junkies I did it for, where I said TJ Hawkins is going to catch double-digit touchdowns and then be the tight end three, in which case Mark Andrews is going to be four. I don't think that's actually going to happen. It was just really fun to think about.
It could be.
Yeah. Because that's the thing. Like, yeah, that second tier of tight end is like 40 guys. So who the hell knows who's going to be that? But I think Andrews will be able to be consistent, young, and talented enough where he will float his way to the top.
Yeah.
So who else does he have?
I don't think that there's any doubt in that. I mean, Mark Andrews, along with Marquise Brown, really are the only two targets of note in that offense for me. You can talk.
I think I said Miles Boykin season earlier in the Miles show.
You can talk about Devin DuVernay all you want. I don't care because I don't think that Lamar cares. I think that Lamar knows who the talent is on his team and he's going to get the ball out to those guys. But yeah, I mean, let's see who this guy has behind Mark Andrews. If I can get it up again, because for some reason it went away.
My first instinct is always to sell tight ends because, like we were saying before, you build, especially in a super flex, you build around safe quarterback, well, not necessarily safe, but value safe quarterbacks and wide receivers. You figure out the rest as you go, because like we just said, every year there's one or two guys that are probably like tight end 16 to 18 who score in the top five just because it's random. Like tight end is so random unless you're a stud like some of these guys. So when you have a stud and you're not ready to compete, I'm fine selling them. But man, it's tough to sell Mark Andrews just because I don't think his price necessarily reflects how good he really is.
It does. It actually is very painful to sell Mark Andrews. And I'm saying this from experience. We're in Olympians 12, which is one of the leagues that we just happen to both be in, one of the dynasty leagues that we both happen to be in.
Yep.
I have George Kittle. Mm-hmm. I had Mark Andrews. I had Noah Fant. And I was forced into selling Mark Andrews because I needed help at quarterback. Mm-hmm. In that league, because I still had Jameis Winston as my QB2 at that point. So I was kind of forced into selling him, but I mean, I'm still kind of having regrets because, like I said, at the end of the season, I do think that we'll start to see a Kittle-type reward from those people that are buying Mark Andrews that you're not seeing right now because I think people want to see it again.
Yeah, I get that, but nothing. Let's perfect correlation just because they're on the same team. Lamar is some people's wide quarterback one, Lamar Jackson. I still have him behind Mahomes because I do want to see that again. Because let's face it, that dude broke fantasy football last year. That shouldn't happen every year, but if he does it again this year, one. I mean, I think Mahomes will have a longer career of being of that level. But who cares if you're going to score monstrous points for the next 4 years? But there's nothing that happened with Mark Andrews that we didn't see coming. We knew he was a good player. We knew it was a good situation because they love using the tight end. And even though they drafted Hayden Hurst two rounds earlier, we knew Andrews was the more athletic and kind of better tight end because no one knew why the hell they drafted Hurst in the first. And now he's gone anyway, so it doesn't matter. And I guess I'm about to say the same thing I said before. We expected this to happen. So I don't think there's a reason to need to see it again. I get that if you want to, because that is the very safe way of thinking about it. But I think this is one of those instances where it's not necessary. Like right now, I can say he is my tight end 3-4-ish area and be completely fine about it. And not if he has a bad beginning of the season, I'm not going to go dropping him to 8-9-10 just because, whoa, he's not doing what we thought he would do. No, we know how good he is. We know how good this offense is and what he does in that offense. If something weird happens where they're just out of sync or Lamar regresses or they game plan for him a little better, I'm fine waiting it out and keeping him at that value. So that's why I think I'm fine to say Mark Andrews is who he is who we thought he was and keeping him where we have him ranked.
All right. And then let's talk about just a couple of guys on this team's bench before we get out of here. Michael Pittman Jr., a lot of people are really excited about going into this offseason. I was not one of those people simply because it doesn't really have anything to do with the player for me. I mean, there is some to do with the player, the fact that he broke out so late in his collegiate career compared to some of his contemporaries, the fact that he's not ultra speedy, he's not ultra athletic. He's one of those guys that definitely does hit the marks pretty much wherever you need him to, but doesn't necessarily stand out above the crowd in any way other than literally standing out above the crowd as exactly. A 6'4 receiver. But the thing that made me kind of worry about Michael Pittman going forward is I expect, especially with the drafting Jonathan Taylor, with Nelson on that line, with how dominant we expect this line to be, with how good we expect this defense to be trading for DeForest Buckner, I think that the Indianapolis Colts are going to be one of the top three rushing teams in the league, and I just don't think that there's that much opportunity out there for what is probably the third receiver on that team on a good day. Now, if T.Y. goes down, which is definitely possible.
Already have a hamstring.
If Paris Campbell goes down as well, again, definitely possible, then I might start to change my tune a bit. But I do think that that's kind of a situation where you got a rookie who's not going to increase his value in year one.
Well, see, here's the thing. Think about those two guys you just mentioned. What do they have in common?
The fact that they both have injury histories.
Well, besides
and
that.
And the fact that they're both speedy, a little bit smaller receivers. They're different than Michael Pittman in that.
There you go. That's exactly what it is. I completely agree on your thoughts about Michael Pittman. It's really rough when big guys break out late because that just means they broke out because they're big. Like, that's the unfortunate truth about it. You know, their bodies caught up to the athleticism of everyone else and talent of everyone else. Like, when you're a 22-year-old gigantic wide receiver going against a 19-year-old cornerback, I mean, you can't see what I'm doing, but I'm just lifting my hand in the air, and that's all you have to do to catch it. But I do like Michael Pittman. I like him a little bit. I like the idea of Michael Pittman, and I'm fine with that. But yeah, he's the only guy like that on the team. He's more athletic than the tight ends that are there, though Trey Burton is there now that I keep forgetting, and he's supposedly athletic, but I would take Michael Pittman over Trey Burton. Is he really? Damn it. I mean, I think Michael Pittman's going to be a great third down receiver where, like, he'll catch it on the back shoulder on the sidelines and in the end zone too. Like, I think he's going to get a lot of touchdowns because Jack Doyle can't stay healthy. Apparently, neither can Trey Burton. So Pittman might be the only big guy on that team, except, you know, screw it. Just throw Jonathan Taylor out wide. That man's bigger than everyone else anyway. And he can catch a little bit. But Pittman, I like long term. I think he'll take some time. He may get some splash games where he catches two touchdowns, and that might increase his value. I can't see his value going down right now. That's the one thing. He's a rookie wide receiver, which everyone knows don't necessarily hit right away. He has Phillip Rivers throwing him the ball, and like you said, they're on first team. So, man, he's not going to be great this year. I really just don't necessarily think there's a chance for that. But I still think he's good, and I think he can be good. Like, why can't he be 30-year-old Dez and be like a very solid wide receiver too, you know, every year? And again, you need that. That's the expectations. Again, like, you're paying an early second for him anyway, so let's face it, you're not going to get a top 12 wide receiver at the 203. You shouldn't.
Unless you drafted Bryan Edwards, and then, you know, there's a chance
that he can God, I also just read that the Raiders put the Gazelle on IR.
So Bryan Edwards season officially.
Terrell, my boy, I love that man so much. Why can't he just do well and stay healthy?
That 1 year on the Chargers, man, without Keenan Allen was absolutely
so good, and just could never get it back after that.
All right, so we talked about this guy a little bit earlier on, and this is probably going to be the last point before we check on Audi here. Antonio Gibson on the roster. on his roster.
Sell.
That's what I'm thinking right now with Antonio Gibson. Because, again, it's a very, very, very weird situation. Yes, you're excited about what Antonio Gibson can provide. You're excited about the fact that if you compare him to the other running backs on his roster, he's got the speed, he's got the athleticism, he's got the pass-catching ability, especially with no Chris Thompson. Yes, you're excited about the fact that he now has access to opportunity that's previously unseen before Darius Geis is no longer on the team. However, there's still six running backs on that roster.
Yeah, I know. I mean, and let's face it, AP ain't going anywhere. That's just what he is.
Exactly, exactly. And I think people are kind of jumping the shark with this. They're assuming there's value where there might be, as opposed to kind of figuring this guy is probably going to be in for this much work, so on and so forth. I think coach speak can only get you so far, and I think you can probably pair Antonio Gibson with a lesser asset and probably come out with a first. I think I'm taking that.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. If you can get a first for Antonio Gibson, you got to do that just based on the fact that you got him so probably at the mid-third at the time. Well, I guess if you're crazy like we are and do drafts the day after the NFL draft, there's so many directions to take this freaking team in that it, like, I want to like talk to this guy. I would be like, this is why I love the idea of this show. Like, seriously, like, there's so many directions you could take and it depends all so many moves. But honestly, the value difference on Gibson is just so much. And there's such a big chance it falls down again. If he's not the next David Johnson, you're not getting a first for him ever again. That's really what it comes down to. And I'd be willing to get one first now instead of a first and a second if he does break out. Because he's not going to go all that much above that unless he is a top five running back. So I'm completely fine getting a first right now if you can. Especially, again, if that's some guy you want to – if you're the Drake guy in your league and you don't want to sell him, that's another perfect guy to pair with Watson to go get a couple of quarterbacks.
And that is the show, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you so much for listening. Fellow technicians out there, I appreciate you tuning in. Please make sure to go to the Dynasty Diagnostic podcast feed on iTunes. Give us a 5-star rating and review. It really helps the podcast grow and reach more listeners. Mr. Dynasty Outhouse, thank you so much for being on the show. Please make sure to check out our Patreon as well. And Russ, I'm going to let you talk about the FF Pod Shirt store.
Oh, ffpodshirts.storeenvy.com. The amount of stuff you could buy on there. Whoo! Was that a good sell? I like that. All of the DAP Network show, well, DAP Network swag in the first place, but Trade Addicts, Junkies, Timeline, a little show called Dynasty Diagnostic. I don't know if you've ever heard of it. Superflex, Super Show. I can't even remember all the stuff anymore. But there's shirts, mugs, stickers, all of this fun stuff. And all proceeds go to charity for the next week, at least until Brian Hart chooses another one. All proceeds are going to go to the Colorectal Cancer Alliance, RIP Chadwick Boseman, Wakanda forever. And it's just, yeah, awesome swag for awesome stuff and for an awesome cause.
All right, and thank you for making it to the Dynasty Diagnostic Service Center today. Please be sure to keep up with your scheduled maintenance and catch us next time to ensure quality performance. See you guys in your next visit.